This is Creepy and Geeky, a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. Welcome to Creepy and Geeky. I'm your host, Robert, and on today's episode, we're continuing our look at Phase 4 of the MCU with the next installment in the Multiverse Saga. On this episode, we're talking about the first season of the Loki TV series, and Ashley Wihanko is here to talk about it with me. Ashley is a writer at Fangirlish, a contributor at POC Culture, and a writer of one of Simu Liu's favorite reviews of his book. She's also a Captain America and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. superfan. She and I also appeared on an episode of Podcast 616 together. Welcome to the show, Ashley.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Like I said, we did an episode of Podcast 616 together and kind of casting my net out for guests for new episodes of my own MCU stuff. It was suggested to me that you would be a good person to talk Loki with. Because apparently you really, really enjoy Loki. So, and who doesn't really?
So. Yeah, it's very, very kind to think I'm ever considered for such things.
Yeah, and we had a good time talking to each other on the podcast 616 episode, and so it seemed natural to be able to get you over here for that. So, but yeah, let's go ahead and talk some Loki. Loki is the third MCU Disney Plus series, which the first three of these were kind of flowed out of the movies. These were kind of continuations of characters who hadn't really had, I guess, the big spotlight, although Loki, I would argue, probably had the biggest presence in the MCU compared to Wanda, Vision, Falcon, and Winter Soldier. Up until this point, he'd had quite a few moments in the sun between the Thor movies and the first Avengers movie. So, he'd had his, but at that point too, he'd run his course. He died in Avengers Infinity War. And so, everybody was like, okay, so what's going to happen? Once we got Avengers Endgame, we knew what had happened with a version of Loki, an earlier version of Loki. So it was interesting to see where they were going to take this and where we had with WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier, we had kind of their continuations on of characters from the fallout of everything that had happened in all of those previous movies. And this time we were taking a look at a Loki that had existed earlier on, a Loki that had just been defeated by the Avengers in the first Avengers movie and hadn't had all the other things that had happened to him. And so it was an interesting idea that they were going to be dealing with this version of Loki. What did you think?
Yeah, I remember actually when it was like first announced or whatever that Loki was going to have like his own show and we'd kind of get to see like where he picked off from in Endgame. And I remember I was talking with my brother about it, who is one of the biggest reasons I ever got into Marvel in the first place. And I was just like, because like you said before, Loki had already kind of been highlighted a lot throughout the MCU, unlike other characters who ended up getting their own shows.
Right.
So I always thought it was just like interesting that they decided to just like keep going with Loki. And like I understood that like people really liked Loki and Tom Hiddleston, so like that was fair, But I was always just like, at first, I was just like, this is interesting. Like, I wasn't against it at all, but I was just like, it'll be intriguing to see how they handle it, especially because, like you mentioned, like, this isn't going to be the same Loki that we had had throughout the Infinity Saga. It's kind of like we're taking him out of the end of Avengers and like taking a new
Yeah.
version of him. So that was really just like fascinating to think about. And just even when you go and watch like Loki, at least for me, sometimes I'll have to be like reminding myself like this isn't that Loki from throughout the Infinity Saga. This is a variant of Loki, and this is him like right after the Avengers.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely when they had announced it was like, but why? We'd already had, Loki's full story, and that the it was intriguing, but it was like, what exactly are they going to be able to do with this character? Are we going to? I mean, obviously, we were going to see something different. We were going to see a Loki that was going to have, from what all we knew, it was a Loki that had escaped and had an Infinity Stone in the form of the Tesseract. And what was that going to mean? What was he going to do? What kind of havoc? Because this is a Loki who hadn't gone through everything that he'd gone through to kind of reshape himself. Because by the end of, I would say by the end of Thor Ragnarok, Loki's been changed a little bit, and it feels like he could change. But he was still doing a lot of the same things, like, and Thor even points it out to him. It's like, everybody else is changing, but you stay the same. And with this series, it was like, well, okay, so this is going to be even farther back. He's just been defeated, so he's still going to be very arrogant, very, very much the Loki that we knew from the beginning. And what is that going to be like? And immediately in that first episode, they hit him with everything that they know about him. Basically, his whole entire life, he gets to see it and see how what his life amounted to. And that deeply affects him and kind of informs everything going forward. And I think that, he gets this where he struggled through all of that before. This series kind of takes that and kind of accelerates that growth with him. And by the end of this, we get a much, much different Loki, somebody who's grown and changed in a lot of good ways. It's a fascinating series because it's very short. Each episode kind of hits a big plot point because, the first episode is about kind of recontextualizing who Loki is, and who he's going to be going forward. Dealing with this new time variance authority and Mobius and getting introduced to all these characters, and learning that the Infinity Stones don't matter in the Time Variance Authority. They have no power there. There's a lot going on. And it's really interesting and fun to see this new world and to see him kind of existing in that and to learn his new place in that. And I thought it was a lot of fun to get to know him, get to re-know Loki and get to know all these characters in this new context of all of this. And this is this is our first, finally, because we've had the little hints to the multiverse before, the little things that they were trying to push with the Mysterio in Spider-Man Far From Home, and in the WandaVision with the fake Pietro. These little pieces that they, kind of teased with us and then kind of pulled back and said, no, we're just kidding. This is our first real taste of what the multiverse was going to hold for us in this series. And I thought that was really fun and fascinating. What did you think?
Yeah, I think it's really fitting for Loki to kind of be that central character who is like helming the multiverse and like that direction of the MCU, just because like the multiverse, as we have come to see, can be so chaotic. And just having Loki, who we also have seen be very chaotic, it just, I think, matches well. But it's also really interesting to think that it's Loki who's kind of like at the center of it all. Because, you know, even though he's had his like insecurities and whatnot, Loki, for the most part, has always put on this like very confident, self-assured facade. And then once, you know, he gets to the TVA, it's not that he's not necessarily confident in himself anymore, but you do see that shift. And there's such an unfamiliarity and like unsureness that he has, like with everything that's going on there, and how all these people know all this stuff about him. And, you know, and he's still not in the mindset of being able to grow into someone more than himself.
Right.
So it's just really interesting to see kind of how it all works out with him and the multiverse, and how that kind of helps him like grow in a way we didn't get to see, you know, in the Infinity Saga.
Right. Yeah, I think that, you're spot on with that. You know, the multiverse is very chaotic, as we've now seen quite a bit, and that definitely this was the best place to start it at. You know, I mean, especially because you want to start it with something that is controlling the chaos, that is, an idea there that the chaos can be controlled, and that this is our first kind of weird little taste of it, and that somebody is controlling it all from behind the scenes. So it's interesting, and like you said, with the with Loki, he's not in the place that he becomes. He's not even in that place until Loki season two, really. I mean, he's getting there. By the end of this season, he's really getting there. He's finding out is who he can become, in a lot of ways, that he can become more than he's meant to be, and he can get past that. You know, that sense of glorious purpose and everything, that inflated ego sense that he has, and put aside himself for others. And that's a big step for him, because he's always been about himself and not about helping others. And throughout this, you see that change. Like he's finding out that he finds out things about the TVA and about himself, and then that, he does the right thing, and because he's figured this out about himself, that he can care about people, and that's a huge thing for him, because he was always alone. He realizes through the course of the series that the things he did was because he always felt alone, and but also at the same time, he felt like he had to be alone. And so he did things that, it was like self-fulfilling prophecy. He always did things to push people away, even though he didn't want to. You know, behind it all, he was, a scared person who didn't want to be alone, but pushed everybody away. And throughout the course of this, he makes friends and discovers, things about himself. And it's just, I think that all of the series so far had been really well done in kind of getting these characters, like getting more depth and characterization with these characters, and just peeling back, getting to their essence, but also moving them forward. And I love that about these series, and especially about Loki, because Loki just there's so much going on here. Like I said, with the multiverse, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, we're getting this deeply personal storyline, but we're also opening up the broader Marvel universe at the same time.
Yeah, and I also think it's like both amusing and incredibly fitting that for Loki to kind of become this different version of himself, he does that by learning from a different version of himself through Sylvie in that variant. And it's like, I mean, it just makes a lot of sense just given how egotistical and just self-focused Loki had been. But then for him to like learn from himself, but like not the same version, like it's weird, but like it works. And
yeah,
I feel like that's like the only way, at least for like that particular Loki, not having like anyone else, that's like the only way he was really going to become more than himself and just better, and just who he's meant to be in general. Because he doesn't have, you know, Thor, someone who he, you know, grew up with. And I think it's also really important that we have like Mobius there too, yeah, who, you know, initially he's not on Loki's side at all. He's kind of like the number one like anti-Loki like club at the TVA, just kind of taking charge of that whole thing, with Sylvie being like that main target. But I think it's really important that, you know, we see Mobius change sides as he learns who Loki is and what his intentions are there. And that by the end of season one, we see that he was on his side and he turns against the TVA, and it shows Loki that, you know, people can just like care about him for him and care about what he has to say, without any like existing ties or whatnot. Because like, right, for someone like Thor, it's like, well, that was his brother. Like there was always going to be some sort of connection there. And like, yeah, it'd be important for Loki to have like that sort of approval and support from his brother, but it like hits differently when it's someone that you don't have kind of like pre-existing or kind of like
the
a tie that you need
unconditional
to have,
love.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah,
Thor,
like,
and that's the thing
to.
He knows. Yeah. And he knows Thor is always going to be there. Like, you know, like he said, like he saw in the version, the version that we've seen, is that Thor was like, you know, he always thought the world of him, that they would, you know, fight side by side together. And that's how Thor has always thought of him. And so, you know, he always had that backup. He knew his mother would love him no matter what. And so, you know, I agree with you. I think that, you know, being able to see himself reflected in a different way through Sylvie, through the eyes of somebody else. And while I agree that Mobius is cautious and wary of Loki, that he was definitely more on his side than like Ravonna and B-15 and them, who wanted to just prune him right away. And so he, like, Mobius was giving him chances to prove himself. And that was like that faith that he was shown by Mobius, and then being able to see what his life could have been like in different ways through Sylvie and through later through the other Lokis he meets. I think that, like, it just shows that, you know, he could be something different if he chooses to be, if he wants to be, he can do things differently. And I think that really has that huge effect on him, having somebody believe in him like Mobius, and having that especially with Sylvie having that mirror put up to him of somebody who's a Loki but slightly different, and see how his life could have been different, you know, because Sylvie was on the run the whole time and had nobody else to be there for her. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I think those having those moments helped propel his growth in a way, because we do get, he gets a lot of growth really quickly. And, you know, some could argue that it was like too fast, but it's like there was a lot going on in every episode of this. It was almost like each episode was like at like an average of like 50 minutes. And within those 50 minutes, it was almost like getting each episode was like a little mini movie. And I really enjoyed that aspect, because each episode was, while there was a through line through them all, it was fairly self-contained also. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah. And going off your point where, you know, he experiences all this growth in a relatively like shorter amount of time. If you just like think about the situation that he's like been put in, it's so fast paced and there's no time to slow down. So it's kind of like you're going to grow or you're going to just stay the same. Yeah. So it's kind of like one or the other. If you were going to grow, it was going to have to happen really quickly. otherwise, you're going to have this like stagnant arc.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, it's he had to grow. Or else it wouldn't be interesting. You know, the show just itself wouldn't be interesting at all. But I think that, you know, like I said, so, you know, in that first episode, we get the first episode where, you know, we meet everybody and Mobius shows him all that, stuff about himself. And that's kind of what, you know, kind of, you know, reforms his whole idea about himself. That's the beginning of it all. And it's through that, realization that this is how his life went originally, and that, you know, and he can see that growth, because in the end, you know, he did in a way sacrifice himself, and be killed by Thanos, and made that, not necessarily sacrificed himself, but definitely played the kind of the hero role at the end, that it, he could see how he grew, within the context of that original life, on the sacred timeline. And then getting to see all that, like I said, reformed how he was going to move forward, and, you know, showed that, you know, and don't get me wrong, he was still kind of focused on taking down the TVA in the beginning, and, you know, getting this chance to find out what was going on and everything. But again, I don't think necessarily that it was always about, you know, getting revenge or anything like that. I think it was really about just getting the answers. Because Loki is definitely that kind of person who would need answers, not like somebody like Mobius, who just had existed there for so long and didn't question anything. Go ahead.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I mean, especially because for Loki, his like whole life has just been full of questions that are left unanswered. And so he will just naturally have that tendency to, you know, want to find whatever answers to whatever he's curious about. And he doesn't just have this like blind faith or trust in really anything or anyone. So, you know, he's presented with this entirely like new organization, the setting and all these like people and just like this structure that he doesn't really think should exist or really be a thing. And so, you know, when he does get there.
Yeah, and it goes against his nature completely, because he is an agent of chaos and mischief. You know, to have something so bureaucratic and run so stringently, yeah, like he's going to bristle against that. That's not going to work for Loki. But yeah, and I mean, we get that, but we already get that within the second episode as well, is that they kind of put Loki to work. You know, they're like, okay, well, you know, we're going to try to, you know, Mobius's idea is to use Loki to help find this variant Loki that is out there killing some of their agents and stealing their little reset bombs. And so they, and he thinks outside the box. He thinks in ways that they just can't think, and figures out, well, there she's, you know, this Loki that we don't know, she's a she, but we do eventually. We find out that Sylvie is, you know, hiding in timelines that have an apocalypse. And so that way that, you know, because they can follow her energy, her variant energy. But if she's in a timeline that has an apocalypse, then nothing can change that apocalypse. And so I found that really fascinating, an interesting aspect of it. And that he was, you know, the person, Loki was the person who was able to figure this out, because again, they're not able to think as outside the box. They're not able to think like a Loki because, you know, they're not able to think so chaotically and imagine that somebody would hide out in a timeline that would be destroyed. And so I found that a very cool and interesting that, you know, it's that he was able to figure that out, and that was definitely playing into who Loki was as a character and as a person.
Yeah, definitely. And like you mentioned, they bring in Loki, and Mobius is taking a much more strategic approach and not just being like, let's just prune him, like, you know, yeah, making things easy. And so trying to use like the Loki that they have to their advantage. And it's definitely like a smart move on their part, as we see, because, you know, he figures out the apocalypse thing, and then they are able to find the Loki variant that they were looking for. But what's interesting now that we've mentioned that is, it's funny because they bring Loki in to help find this other Loki so they can capture them. And then what ends up happening is kind of just like the complete opposite, kind of, because they find the Loki that they were looking for. And it doesn't work out in their favor because, you know, they start teaming up or whatever, and then they're not. Then you have both Lokis against the TVA instead of the TVA being able to achieve any sort of success with either of them.
Right. Yeah. I think it's interesting too, because we get, you know, Loki figures out that, that Sylvie's using enchantments rather than, you know, something else, you know, something he would do. And so he's already discovering that this, you know, Loki variant is, you know, already doing things differently than he would do. And it's interesting to see him start to discover that and to figure out, you know, that because this, and this was what was fascinating too, because that because she was a Loki variant, but she was using enchantments, there was a lot of, you know, kind of chatter around the time, was she really a Loki variant, or was this like the MCU version of the, you know, comic book character, the Enchantress? And I kind of feel like they were kind of playing both on that. I think Sylvie's supposed to be kind of she is a Loki variant, but she's also supposed to evoke that character of the Enchantress as well. And I think it was a great way of bringing in that character without necessarily bringing in that character fully.
Yeah, and I think it really works too, because we get to see a more elevated version of Loki that we haven't experienced before. Especially because, like, the Loki we'd really had just seen was very much so the god of mischief, and he wasn't trying to do anything too. He wanted power, but it's not like he was using like his own power per se to gain more. When we eventually like learn like Loki does have the power himself to be more powerful.
Right.
And that he doesn't need to like rely on like the Infinity Stones or whatever to kind of take that next level for himself.
Yeah, and that is something, you know, he discovers, you know, towards the end of this first season, is just how much power Loki's can have when he's exposed to another Loki who has quite a bit of power. You know, it's at a point where that power doesn't really do that Loki any good in terms of, you know, taking over people or anything like that. But it's interesting to see, and it comes into play, I think, more so in season two, having that power. And even though it's not really, I think, explicit in the second season about him having that power and finally accessing it and everything, I think that, you know, having this kind of pointed out in this season is nice to go back to this first season after you've watched the second season and just kind of see the little seeds that they laid along the way that you know, blossom in that second season and beyond. So it's really interesting to see that going on, which it's a lot of fun. You know, in the third season, you know, at the end of that second episode, he finally gets to confront Sylvie, who, you know, at the time still didn't know it was Sylvie, but they have this, you know, interaction, and he ends up following her through the doorway that she creates to get away, and he gets away from the TVA at the time, and that leads us into the third episode, which is, you know, set on this planet called Lamentis, Lamentis One, and which is an apocalypse. Well, I don't really. I just watched this yesterday. I don't remember how it happened, but they end up getting over there. I think he grabs the temp pad and sends them to this apocalyptic world. And they don't realize it at first until they get outside. And they've only got like less than a day to be able to get off this planet before it's destroyed. And they've got to figure out how to get there. And they get all this time to kind of talk. Once they kind of, you know, settle their beef with each other, you know, partially, not fully, but once they kind of settle that a little bit, they can kind of talk to each other, and they have some time to get to know each other and get to know how each of their lives, you know, were different. And you get a little bit more of Sylvie's past, and a little bit more about Loki, which we hadn't learned about. They have a really good conversation on the train, leading to this spaceport. The city where there's a spaceport where they need to try to get to this arc that's taking people off the planet. But I thought it was very interesting what more we learn about each of them, about what we learn about Loki, and everything. I think it was very interesting that they do play into, because Loki's a shapeshifter and a mischief maker and everything like that, that It was never said until now, but even in the Norse mythologies, you know, he shapeshifted back and forth between male and female, and he would have, you know, and he would have dalliances with both sexes. And so it's explicitly said in this that, you know, he did have relationships with men and women. And I thought that was an interesting, it was very kind of like quick, but it was cool that they managed to say that and kind of establish that so that it was part of the MCU canon there. Something that we haven't really gotten with a lot of characters in the MCU at all, any kind of, you know, queer sexuality. And so that was really cool that they added that in, at least for Loki, especially for one of the biggest characters.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they did it in a way that worked without trying to be like, oh, we're really just trying to make that statement and show we're,
yeah,
you know, going to be diverse and tackle as much as we can, and try to just like kind of be showy about it. It's kind of just like a fact, you know, in,
yeah,
and they don't need to try to be too much with it. And I don't think they tried to undersell it either. It was just like one of those things like, hey, this is how Loki is, and we want you to know that, but we don't need to present it in a way where it feels inauthentic.
Right. They didn't need to have him have some kind of romance with another, you know, male Loki or anything like that, that, you know, he needed to, you know, there was nothing that had to beat you over the head about it. It was just like, it was a quick reference to it, done. It was just enough to kind of go, okay, we acknowledge it, and we're going to give that aspect of him and let people know that, yes, this is who he is. And, you know, we'll move on from there. And, you know, and I think it was handled well, where it doesn't beat you over the head with it, but just tells you enough about him and, who he is. And I like that. I think that it was well done and well handled, especially within the context of them getting to know each other. And getting to, you know, kind of discover that, yes, they might be different in a lot of ways, but down at the core, they're very much the same.
Yeah, and kind of just going off that, though, I think it's interesting how, especially in that episode, you kind of see how, yes, they're both Lokis, and they have similar, they'll have like certain core qualities that will just be the same, but because they are not coming from the same, you know, like upbringing and whatnot, they have their different like approaches to things.
Right.
So like we have Sylvie, and she's like very much so a survivor, and the way she just approaches everything, she knows she needs to be strategic and think things through with it. And that's how she's been able to survive and just make it as long as she has. And then we have Loki, who's kind of just has always, even though he, you know, didn't grow up with the biological family that he came from, he still had family and was able to grow up and have some sort of life. And he did come from that more privileged place, and you can see how he kind of just, the way he approaches things, especially because when it's like his fault they end up on Lamentis of right. All the places, because he doesn't think about what the Tempad is set to or anything. It's just like, we have to go, let's go.
Yeah.
And so you see that difference just like when they get there, and Sylvie's like, of all the places, of all like the apocalypses, like, you made us end up in this one because you don't think things through.
Yeah. Well, and that just goes to the fact that, like, Sylvie's been on the run since she was a kid. She's grown up running from the TVA. So she knows things about the TVA, about the Tempad, about just on the run, being on her own. You know, she's had nobody to rely on this entire time. And Loki, meanwhile, has always had his family to fall back on. They've always, while they don't like the things he does, they still accept who he is and will always try to think the best of him. And he'll largely fail. And I think that's what's interesting, too, is that we get this about Loki. And this is how it is with families, too, is there's always somebody in the family who is like that, the kind of the black sheep of the family, you know, and you still want them to to, you know, grow past that. And so you're still forgiving of it up to a point. I mean, obviously, you know, at a certain point, somebody is, if they've proven irredeemable, then you kind of just have to let them go. But if, you know, but Loki has shown that he is redeemable. You know, there is aspects of his nature that show through that he can be a good person, even though, you know, he's shown time and time again that he doesn't want to be at times. So but it is interesting, though, because he does think, he doesn't think, he reacts, he's reactionary and more on the fly than Sylvia is, you know, who is, has to think things through, has to think so many steps ahead. And that, I mean, that's just, it's just proven with Loki's history. You look at the things that he did in, you know, in the Avengers movie and in the Thor movies, he's always just, he thinks only so far ahead, and doesn't appreciate all the variables. Whereas Sylvie at least attempts to think through all the variables and works through as much as possible. And so it's good for him to, again, going back to that, getting back to see a version of himself that has these qualities that he hasn't had, and to see, well, will that change him? And how will that change him? Go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry, that was something.
Oh, you're okay. Yeah, no, I think that, you know, it just, you know, they end up at the end of that third episode, you know, they end up with the spaceship getting destroyed that they were trying to get to. And, you know, they're just kind of left on Lamentis, and we're left with, okay, are they going to be able to get off this? I mean, you know, we're only halfway through the show. Obviously, they're going to be able to get off. you know, they're not going to end it here, but it's nice dramatic tension. And Mobius figures out a way to get them off and creates doors for them, figures out where they are and creates doors for them to get back. And then they're taken into custody. And, you know, you get to see you know, we'd seen that Ravonna and Sylvie had this kind of past, because Ravonna was the one who captured Sylvie, and Sylvie's, you know, trying to, you know, get this. Like, and so this is kind of like the black mark on Ravonna's a career. You know, obviously she's risen to being a judge now, but, you know, it's still one of those things where it's like the one who got away and the one who's been causing trouble this whole time was on her watch. And so she's got, you know, this kind of vendetta against her. And, you know, so they've got this nice antagonism. And meanwhile, Mobius is just like, you know, you betrayed me, Loki. And so he throws him into this interesting time loop prison where he just gets the crap beat out of him over and over again by Sif. And but it's again, it's one of those aspects where, because of, he's already kind of learned a bit about who he is, and he fights against it at first, but, you know, having it faced to face multiple times, and we're not clear on exactly how many times it takes, but he does. He admits his wrongness. He admits that, you know, it's because he's lonely and because he's afraid to be alone. And it's so that's why he does the things he does. And it's an interesting part of his character, that, you know, it's one of those things that seems obvious, but it's just, it was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense, you know, as to why he is who he is.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of like one of those things that's, like you said, it's like seems obvious, but it's, I think, especially for a character like Loki, it can be easy to kind of overlook because you're kind of maybe occupied with like the mischief of it all and kind of like the things that he can do, as opposed to trying to get down to like the nitty-gritty of the character and see truly where he's coming from.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think that, we get with Loki, I mean, everything, everybody loves mischievous Loki. Everybody loves just, who he is as this character. And this definitely is a peeling back of this character. Not that we're not still getting that mischievous Loki and everything, but it's more about peeling back who he is at the core and discovering who he could be. And that is what's enjoyable about the series as a whole is discovering who he could be going forward rather than who he was up until now. And I think, you get to see, Tom Hiddleston play this character, and I think he's having a lot of fun with it too. It's getting a lot more depth and nuance to a character that had quite a bit of nuance before, but seems to have even more now. In every episode, we're just getting deeper and deeper into who this character really is. And it's a lot of fun and very interesting as a whole to get this.
Yeah, and what's great about, having Loki as long as we have, which we don't have the fortune with, from all these characters, is we get to not only experience Loki's growth, and for Loki in particular, we get to see it in like two different ways, but we also get to see how Tom Hiddleston evolves and grows with that role and as an actor as well. So that's cool too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun seeing him from, the first Thor movie and moving on through the entire Infinity Saga, and then to have everything redefined in the new multiverse saga, and to see where it's gonna go. And we're only seeing him within the context of these two seasons of Loki, but it'll be interesting to see if there's anything more he does after that. I'm not certain given the end of season two of Loki, but it would be interesting to see if there's anything else to go after that. But yeah, in this fourth episode of the first season, he's they because Loki. Oh. Okay, so earlier in the second episode, Sylvie had touched B-15's mind through an enchantment, and B-15 was then rocked because she saw her previous life. And throughout this, we'd had this other hunter, C-20, who had this interaction with Sylvie and had seen also a past of her life. And for all we knew, from what Mobius said, was that everybody that works at the TVA has always been with the TVA, that their whole existence has been with the TVA. There was nothing before or after or whatever. And so, but then they found out that no, they'd had lives before, that everybody who worked at the TVA was a variant, and that they had, been changed via the TVA, given new memories or whatever. And had those old lives erased. And so that changes things for B-15. She's just like, okay, this changes everything about who we are, what we're doing here. And that at the end of the towards the end of the episode, when Loki and Sylvie finally get an audience with the timekeepers, she helps break them free so that they can attack the timekeepers. And the timekeepers were fascinating. That I unfortunately normally I bring a lot of comic book context to these MCU episodes, but I don't have a lot of familiarity with either Time Variance Authority or the timekeepers in general. I know the timekeepers existed as characters, and they played a role in Kang and the and some other stuff that happens later. But I'm not as well versed in that, unfortunately. So I don't have a lot of context for this episode. But I did find it fascinating to have to see them and to have that interaction with them. And then at the end of it, though, Sylvie, once they fought through all the TVA troops and through Ravonna herself, that they take out one of the timekeepers, and that they're found out to be just robots. And I was just like, okay, so there's something else going on behind all this that is, you know, pretending that these timekeepers are the ultimate authority, but there's something else going on. And I found that, like, you know, very interesting. It's like, it leaves so much more like, what the hell is going on? So, you know, what did you think?
Yeah, it was definitely interesting when you got to the whole, like, timekeepers, like, part of, like, the season, especially because they kind of been, like, teasing at, like, hey, there's these, like, entities, like, in charge, and, like, they're powerful and all this stuff, and they just have, like, so much say
right. That
you wouldn't even think ever existed. And then, but also, like, I feel like when, you know, it was first airing and there were all these like rumors going around, it's like, oh, we're gonna get like Kang or whatever, so it was interesting to like experience and see how they were going to be approaching things. And then so we get to the timekeepers and it's just like just gigantic fraud, and it's just a room of like giant robots. And it was like funny, but also like, well then, like, now what? Like, what is this? Kind of like feeling not entirely dissimilar to like Sylvie and Loki in that moment, where it's just like, well, what's going on then? Like, this is so stupid. They've been controlling everything, but these are just robots. So like, you're kind of like exasperating, like in a laughing and exasperated way, and like you don't even know what's going on, and kind of like don't know what to do with yourself. But like, especially for like Sylvie, who'd been like so focused on taking down the TVA, and like she finally gets to the timekeepers, and like it's just, it's all fake. And it's like, I imagine incredibly gut-wrenching and just like maybe like adjacent to failure.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you finally get to that ultimate thing where you think, okay, well, we're gonna take them out. Everything's gonna fall from here. But it doesn't, because like, even that is a house of cards. Like, it's like when Dorothy and the gang get to the end of the Yellow Brick Road and get to the wizard and discover that. I mean, because it's very analogous. It's them getting to the wizard and finding out that the wizard is just a person, that there's, you know, there's kind of nothing behind the curtain. There's nothing all powerful there. And, you know, that's, you know, kind of what they assume at that point. And so it's just, and previous to this, we'd already seen Mobius get pruned. And for all we knew, being pruned was them dying. They were getting erased from existence. Towards the end of this, as they're trying to figure out, you know, what they're going to do next, that's when Loki gets pruned and vanishes right in front of our eyes, and right in front of Sylvie as well. And so it was definitely a shocking moment to end the episode on, because we're just like, what the heck just happened? Like, is this the end? Like, I mean, obviously we knew there were a couple more episodes. So it's like, okay, what's going to happen if he's gone? What is the show going to be? And I like that they kept doing that. They were just like, okay, they keep leaving you on these kind of cliffhangers of a sorts. Cause right after the credits, we get a scene of Loki waking up, in an, in this new place, and standing over him are these three, well, four Loki variants. And again, I think it's fascinating the way we're getting variants in this, and it's a great way that they did it. Was each one can look different. You can have some variants that look the same, and be very similar in look and mannerisms and everything else. But you also get Lokis who are very different, and any variant, like for anybody, and we see this later on in the next Spider-Man movie, is that, you know, we have all these variations, and these variants can all look different, be different, and have different backgrounds and stories. And I thought that was a fascinating way to move forward and not have to be slavish to keeping the same actor in a role, especially if that actor was no longer available. And it opens up the door to future stories with characters that we may get again, who the actors no longer want to play them or have maybe aged out of wanting to play them anymore. People like Tony Stark and Captain America, we could still get versions of them down the road that aren't, you know, played by these actors. And I thought that was a great, great way to move forward with the MCU.
Yeah. I also think it's just plainly more fun.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, like as much as we all want, you know, all these like movies and TV shows to have like some great meaning and like depth with their like storytelling, sometimes it's just like nice to have something that's fun. So you can, if you can have both, obviously that's great. And with like the variants, especially with the ones we got in Loki, it was just a lot of fun to see these different ones, especially with a character like Loki, who we've like, as we've discussed, can be so chaotic. And then you can see how all these different Lokis interacting together can just like be a mess, but like such a joy to watch still. I mean, because like, who would have ever thought like, here's an alligator, we should also make him a Loki.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think, you know, yeah, it plays definitely into the chaos of who Loki is for sure. And then, you know, and like you said, it's just a lot more fun to have these different variations. It does open up for, you know, not just like the stuff I said, but like you said, for more interesting and more diverse storytelling, and more diverse versions of these characters moving forward. You know, and it's just, there's so much that can be done with these concepts now, that, you know, we couldn't do before, you know, before we opened up the multiverse, as it were. But yeah, we go into the next episode, and Ravonna is trying to, you know, is trying to pretend like she's working with Sylvie and figuring out who is behind the TVA after all. And when Sylvie realizes that Ravonna is messing with her, she prunes herself and takes herself to the void, which is where Loki ended up going in the previous episode. And meanwhile, Loki has discovered, you know, is on the run from this giant cloud, this evil cloud called Eliath, that it will, you know, eat up all the variants, and that's its job, is to kind of eat up all this variant energy. And these Lokis, you know, because Lokis are survivors, and they will do whatever they can to survive and to do what they need to do, that they've banded together to find a place. And so they help our Loki, you know, escape Eliath and get to underground, where they can hold up for a bit while they figure out their next move. You know, they've just survived there. They're not interested really in you know, figuring out things. They're just like, this is where we exist now. We don't want to mess with anything. We've lived this long doing this. But Loki's just like, no, we got to figure out what's going on. We got to stop this creature. And he manages to convince them until one of them has betrayed them. And a whole mess of other Lokis shows up, which was great because we do get another Tom Hiddleston version of Loki. It's President Loki, which was great. But meanwhile, you've got all these other weird versions kind of slapdash together Lokis. And it was fun to see them all betray each other and just, you know, stab each other in the back, both literally and figuratively. And it made for a fun visual and a fun sequence of them kind of trying to work together and falling apart like that.
Right. And I think what's especially great about that kind of whole like scene and whatnot is we kind of get to experience like Loki in like as many ways as we can. Like we have the
right.
We have like as much as like we want Loki to have like this full growth, like they're not all going to be like that. We still have the ones who, you know, can't trust anyone and whatnot. And that's why we ultimately have this just like massive fight breakout. But then we still do have some of them who are just trying to look out for one another. When you have Kid Loki and then like I guess classic Loki helping our Loki get out and escape that mess.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's great getting classic Loki. We didn't talk much about him yet, but Richard Grant plays classic Loki, and it's such a great role. And you know, but it does, you know, he's wearing literally the classic comic book outfit, and it just goes to show again why, as much as we might like the classic outfits in the comic books, they don't translate well to the real world and into the movies. And so it's fun that we get this version of him in that classic costume, just to kind of, you know, not necessarily prove the point, but to just to show it, you know, that we get this version of Loki who's been around for a long time, who's escaped, who escaped a lot of stuff, who sent himself into exile and found himself to be so lonely that he decided to go back and try to reconnect with Thor and his family. Excuse me. And it was fascinating to see a Loki that had lived out his life the way that our Loki had kind of originally thought he wanted. And to see that he, you know, at the end of things, that wasn't fulfilling, that, you know, it was great. And again, this goes into what we were saying before about getting to see variations of his life and being able to learn and grow from that context. But, you know, because he's able to grow from that, that puts us into a better position once Sylvie arrives and they decide, you know, she's there to get past the void aspect and to get past the Liath. Once they can get past the Liath, they can then is find out who might be pulling the strings. Cause just like she was existing in the apocalypses, that this person who they are trying to find, who's controlling everything, he lives beyond the void. So he's hiding beyond the void, like she was hiding in the apocalypses. So it's a fascinating aspect that mirrors each other. And it, once she gets there and says, hey, this is what we should do, Loki, you know, is like, okay, yeah, let's do that. And with the help of classic Loki, they manage to get Eliath to enchant Eliath enough to get them past the door, to get them to the door of whoever might be there. And I just it's fascinating because, again, they needed this teamwork. They needed to work together, to play with each other's strengths, and to, you know, discover that, you know, they don't work best alone, that they work better together or with other people. And that is something that we'll see even more so in the next season.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, it's like interesting to realize that, like, all along Loki is capable of all this growth, and in this setting the best way for him to achieve that is by learning from different versions of himself. And I think it's also just a nice thing all around for everyone, like all the different Loki variants, to like realize who are like helping one another, that, you know, that they have this like capacity to, I guess, like be a team player and like achieve some sort of like effective success that isn't necessarily all about them.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I think that, you know, it takes them, you know, working together to realize that they work better together, and they work better in teams. I mean, it's even with working together with Mobius and everything. It's not just working together with themselves, with versions of themselves. It's working together with other people that makes it work better overall, that you can't just rely on just yourself, and that you need others to, you know, to help get things done, to help keep you accountable, to, you know, do all of this. It's something that we all, you know, struggle with and have to figure out ourselves. And it's nice to see Loki figuring that out, and for each of them to figure out that they're better together. And even Sylvie, who's been on the run and has been on her own this entire time, that, you know, since she's teamed up with our Loki, that things have actually now happened. The things that she's been trying to work towards are actually happening now. She's actually made it to this building at the end of all time, and they're about to confront the person who's been controlling everything. And we get that, you know, they besides the moment where we find out this Miss Minutes, this computer program that we didn't even talk about yet, has been that's been a part of the TVA, has been, you know, a part of it all, and has been helping to control aspects of this person's overall control of the TVA. And we get more of Miss Minutes in the second season. We get a little bit more fleshed out about what exactly she is, and so it's but at least within the context of this, it's interesting to see her knowing more, and that she wasn't just this weird little AI program. It was something that was more involved and was more a part of the overall structure of the TVA.
Right. Because I feel like at first, when we were just getting all this like Loki hype and things were just first coming out, and, you know, we were introduced to Miss Minutes, and I feel like we were all just like, oh, this is just some silly little like TVA mascot thing to like make things a little more fun. And then, you know, we get further into it and we see like she actually has a lot of knowledge and power within the TVA, and it's not just some little anthropomorphic clock AI thing that is just there to make things maybe seem more welcoming.
Right.
And then, like, especially, I rewatched the first season, and it doesn't matter how many times, like, I'll rewatch it. The Miss Minutes jump scare gets me every single time. And so it's like, oh, at first you're like, oh, it's just like this, you know, nice little thing. And then you're like, oh, no, she's really creepy.
No, she's a lot darker than, you know, we know at first. And especially once you find out more about her in the second season, things take an even darker turn with her. So, but yeah, we finally get past that. And Loki and Sylvie are about to confront the person behind it all, and we find out that it's He Who Remains. That's what he goes by. And it's this character who, or this person who has been controlling everything. And we get the backstory. We earlier had gotten this backstory through Miss Minutes, through this little instructional video that Loki watched in the beginning about how the TVA came into existence, about this multiversal war. But He Who Remains gives broader context to it all, and says that it was him and his variants that were the cause of the multiversal war. They started fighting each other for dominance, and he's the one who won. And so in the aftermath of that, once he won, he created the TVA and created the one timeline, the sacred timeline, to prevent any other versions of himself coming to be, so that there would never be a multiversal war again. And so they are given a choice. Loki and Sylvie can kill him and let chaos reign and let all the other versions of himself come to existence again and create another multiversal war, or they can take on, both Loki and Sylvie can take on control of the TVA and try to keep things under control and not have the multiverse collapse completely. And, you know, Sylvie, who has just been like manipulated and, you know, had her life turned upside down by all of this, just cannot see past that. Loki understands that, hey, obviously, you know, it sucks, but there needs to be some kind of order to things, which is interesting for him, because being this person of chaos, that to sit there and go, okay, well, something needs to be done to keep this from becoming even more chaotic, and that this aspect of reality has been, you know, controlled as it has. And so it is, so he understands that, and he tries to stop Sylvie from killing He Who Remains, because she's just like, I don't care. I don't care what happens. He needs to die. And so it's an interesting, you know, they have an interesting fight with each other that ends up with her knocking Loki away through a TVA door and trapping him on the other side. And she ends up killing He Who Remains. And everything starts to go to hell. All the timelines start branching insanely. And that's kind of where we leave it. It's a crazy ending to all this, and you know it's great. You know, Jonathan Majors is the person who plays He Who Remains, and had a future in the MCU going forward from this. He Who Remains was a variant of a character called Kang, and who was this time traveling villain in the Marvel comic books, and that. So he had this future and was going to be part of this much bigger storyline that was going to happen in multiple movies down the road. But through legal issues that he had, he is no longer a part of the MCU, and they are potentially recasting him. I hope they get somebody good. He was a great actor. He's a great actor. He's a horrible person in real life, as we've found out. But he was such a great actor, and I was so happy to see him in the role, and just to see all that wasted potential, it just sucks. But it's still nice to go back and see this performance, because it's a very good performance. I'll give it that much. So, what did you think of the ending?
I think it's kind of ironic, thinking of it now, because, you know, like we know, Sylvie doesn't want to consider what He Who Remains has to say and what could potentially happen if she goes through with what has been her, like, goal all along, and, like, essentially ending the TVA, which she does by, or she thinks she does, by killing He Who Remains, so that, you know, she can get her revenge or whatever, and kind of just, like, stick it to the TVA. And then we have Loki on the other side, who is finally now just, like, thinking things through and considering the consequences of his and others' actions and what that could mean for quite literally everyone. And so it was interesting to, you know, see that kind of that switch between them two, because, you know, like before, it was just Loki was the one doing whatever he wanted, without taking too much thought. And then we had Sylvie, who was being more strategic with what to do, but she especially did that because she had a very set goal in mind, and had been going at this for so long. So it was interesting to see that reversal. But then also it was intriguing to see how He Who Remains helped set up what was to come. Not only in Loki, which we, you know, you don't know that there's a season two until you get to the very end of the first season, when you first watch it anyway. But then just the MCU as a whole, it was nice to see that it was doing some work for both of those things. And then just for Loki, especially, you feel for him in the end, just knowing all that he's gone through and just the amount of, like, emotions and experiences he'd gone through just in that, at the end of time with He Who Remains and Sylvie. He has all that to take in, and he doesn't really have time to process everything. And then Sylvie sends him back to the TVA, and just everything's different.
Right. Yeah, I like that you caught that. Didn't think about that. Yeah, Loki finally is thinking things through, and she's just reactionary based on, you know, her whole life of getting to that point. It's like, you know, finally when she's presented with, you know, these moments, she reacts rather than, you know, because she's only thought it through so far. As much as she's thought through everything else leading up to this point, once she gets to the point of having a chance to confront the timekeepers, she takes them out. And then she, you know, regardless of what that's going to mean. And the same thing when she confronts He Who Remains, nothing's going to stop her from accomplishing her goal of destroying the TVA. And that's ultimately what happens. She destroys the TVA as we knew it. And what that meant going forward was going to change everything. And, you know, it was very interesting to go into that second season, you know, kind of going, okay, what's going to happen now? How are they going to fix things? How are they going to, and the second season becomes even more chaotic in so many ways. And it's an interesting place to leave it here with Loki getting, you know, once he collects himself, he goes and tries to find Mobius. And once he finds Mobius, Mobius doesn't know who he is. Things have changed already because her killing He Who Remains, it has now changed time and everything for the TVA from that point. And it's, we go into the end of that. Like you said, at first we didn't know, like there had been no announcements of that there would be a Loki season two. And then at the end of that episode, you get Loki will return in season two. And we were just like, okay, at least we're going to get some resolution to this story. We're not being left completely blind here. So, and that was good. So, but it definitely was an interesting end. It was, you know, we're definitely in a better place, I think, with in terms of who Loki is as a character moving forward. He's obviously changed and become a different person. He can no longer go back to being the Loki he was before. And I think that ultimately was the most fascinating aspect of this series, was to see this growth and change in Loki in a way we'd never seen him before. Did you have anything else that you wanted to remark about any of this series as a whole, or anything specific before we wrap up?
I don't think so. Okay. I think I'm good. Covered a lot. Things I didn't consider before. So, yeah.
Good. All right. Well, why don't you let people know where they can find you online?
Yeah, so I am on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, pretty much any social media you'll find me with the username Wijangco12, WIJANGCO 12. And you can find some of my writing at fangirlish.com and POCculture.com.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on for this episode. It was a lot of fun talking Loki with you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was great to talk some Loki, and you know, just always fun to talk about Marvel stuff.
Absolutely. Thanks again to Ashley for joining me. On Monday, Donna returns to the show to talk about Ganja and Hess and Scream, Blackula Scream. And on Friday, Katrina is back to talk about the first movie of Phase 4, Black Widow. Thanks for listening. Creepy and Geeky is a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. Please check out morbidlybeautiful.com/podcasts for more great shows. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving the show 5 stars and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Also, please share the podcast on social media to help spread the word. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or at creepyandgeeky.com. Music for the podcast is Gratitude, composed by Harper Smith. You can follow the podcast on social media at Creepy and Geeky on both Twitter and Instagram. If you'd like to follow me, I'm GeekThulu on Twitter and Geek.Thulu on Instagram. You can support the podcast by ordering teas and more on TeePublic or by donating to the coffee page. All of the links are in the show notes. Finally, don't forget, stay creepy.